Hey guys, today on the show, Bob Ritchie, Furman men's basketball coach. You remember their one shining moment last year, earlier this year actually, at the NCAA tournament when they beat Virginia as a 13 seed and upset the Cavaliers 68-67, hit a three at the buzzer. It was Furman's first time since 1980 that they made it to the NCAA tournament. They beat Chattanooga, they won the Southern Conference Championship. But this is a journey that we take in this podcast with Bob Ritchie and goes back to 2022 and all that took place in leading up to the 2023 conference tournament and ultimately the March Madness NCAA first round victory that they had over Virginia. Lots of great stuff here from Coach Ritchie. Can't wait for you to hear it. First, want to remind you about sportsspectrum.com. That is our website with tons of free content on there. But ultimately, I want you to think about the magazine icon that is at the top of sportsspectrum.com, our website. And you can subscribe to our quarterly magazine, the Sports Spectrum magazine. It's been going strong since 1985. And our current issue is out now that you can get if you go to sportsspectrum.com and subscribe. And we want to give you a little bonus, a little 15% off to entice you to get that one-year subscription. And this is the time of year as we start to think about gifts, right? With the kids, with Christmas and the holidays. Sports Spectrum's magazine is perfect for kids. If you're looking for clean content, faith-filled content, amazing stories, family-filled content on athletes and coaches who love Jesus, I want to give you a little bit of just an insight on what the next magazine is going to feature. How about a story on Dude Perfect? And kids love Dude Perfect. So imagine getting this magazine for your child, letting them read about Dude Perfect and letting them hear about the gospel and how Jesus is working in Dude Perfect's life. So consider subscribing to the Sports Spectrum magazine. Go to sportsspectrum.com, put in the code podcast15 when you check out, podcast15, and save 15% off a one-year subscription. You can do that over at sportsspectrum.com. And we're also presented today by our friends at Operation Christmas Child. They've been reaching millions of children each year with the good news of Jesus Christ simply by using shoebox gifts. Since 1993, 30 years, more than 209 million children in over 170 countries and territories have received a shoebox gift. Anyone can pack a shoebox and help send joy to a child in need with our friends at Operation Christmas Child. You can pack a shoebox with fun toys, school supplies, personal care items, bring it to a drop-off location during the National Collection Week. Now that's coming up November 13th through the 20th, so you still have time. You can even build a shoebox online. We do it with our family. It's a lot of fun. I think you guys will love participating with Operation Christmas Child. And think about this, the good news of Jesus Christ is shared alongside your gift, and each child is invited to join a discipleship program. So learn how to pack a shoebox, view gift suggestions, and find your nearest drop-off location by visiting samaritanspurse.org/OCC. samaritanspurse.org/OCC with Operation Christmas Child. Is Coach Bob Ritchie with Furman. Welcome back to Sports Spectrum, Coach. How are you?
I'm doing great. Appreciate you having me on, Jason. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, it's good to have you back on the show. Since we last talked to you, a few things happened. Some really cool opportunities. How about going to the NCAA tournament? Some really good stuff there that I want to dive into with you, certainly being a man of faith and kind of how God has directed your steps through all of this. But I want to start by going back to March of 2022. And Furman was in the Southern Conference Championship game against Chattanooga, and it was, what, a three at the buzzer that left you guys not being able to make it to the NCAA tournament that, you know, Chattanooga hit. Someone recently told me that it's in the struggle, in the losses, in the failures, where God does his best work. So for you, what kind of work was God doing in you as you think back to that time?
Well, Jason, I'll actually pull it back to 21 a little bit.
Great.
And that was probably, you know, we'd gotten through the world of COVID, to a degree. And remember 21 summer, everybody kind of started thinking, man, we might be getting back to normal. And then all of a sudden the Delta variant popped up. And unfortunately, my father ended up passing that October due to that. And it was right in the middle of fall camp. And we were right in the middle of really the most, intense practice time of really preparing your team for a season. And we had come off of a year before where we had a decent season in terms of, expectation was high. It was COVID year. All five of the players that started on that team 3 years ago will be playing professional ball to some capacity this year. And we got upset in the tournament, and one of our players left to go to Alabama. It was really the first time we lost somebody that we really wanted to keep. And you're going into this next season, and it's kind of like, man, like things just are feeling a little hard. And my father passes away, and we get into the season, and we go in that season, and we go and we beat Louisville early in the season. I think it was the second game of the year. And we start showing some, hey, this team's got a chance to be really, really good. And you fast forward through that year, and we make it all the way to the championship game of the tournament. And leading up to that, we basically had only been to the championship game two other times in this century. And both of those times were basically like a 10 seed situations where like just both of them were basically miracles. So it's really the first time in the 2000s, really going back to probably in the 80s that you could say we were a one or two seed expected to be in the championship game. And hey, now we're here. Well, the other thing that had kind of happened that year is we also, we had kind of been stubbing our toe against our rival, which, that was Mike Young actually had those guys rolling before he went to Virginia Tech. And then both teams were really good, but it seemed like we never really played well in that series. Well, then all of a sudden we swept our rival for the first time since 2006. And so we're in this championship and you're like, man, okay, like tonight's the night. Like it's going to be the first time in 42 years that we're going to the tournament. It had been 1980 since Furman had been in the NCAA tournament.
Incredible, yeah.
And you'd gone through all this hard. And then all of a sudden you start seeing, the momentum per se kind of coming back in a favorable direction. And you just felt like, it was a little bit one of those emotional moments for me. It was like, man, this will be that moment where, we win tonight and we're going to the tournament. And, you have that kind of not closure moment of your father passing, but like, hey, all that stuff where you're like, okay, this is all going to make sense after tonight. And man, I tell you what, we're up, I think 12 at one point in the first half. Chattanooga was really, really good. They had multiple high major transfers and really, really deep and old team. And the game gets in overtime, and we have the ball, tie game. We have possession, and we're going to hold for the last shot. We know what play we're running. It's the go-to play that we save for these scenarios. And basically, I tell Mike to go at eight just in case he needs some time to make a second play. And he gets right to the basket and he scores. And they're basically starting to escort my wife down. Furman fans, obviously tons of disbelief over the years. And man, is there a curse? And hey, we're finally going. And they inbound the ball. And the opposing coach is currently calling a timeout. The ref does not hear it. Play continues. We have two people on the ball, Jason. And this player throws up a shot from about 35 feet. And when I tell you it didn't even touch the rim, I mean, this thing went straight in the net. And it was one of those moments where you're just like, are you really serious? Like, did this, it, am I living through this? Like, did this just happen that, it's been 42 years and we're tasting like that close. And man, like, it just got ripped straight from our hearts. And it was a really hard moment. But I'll tell you this, and for people listening, I think it's one of those situations where, usually adversity challenges, molds, humbles in a way that prosperity never does. And in that moment, we had a chance to where we could really say, hey, you know what? This is just bad luck. Like, this is a, are you kidding me? And really where It was one of those deals where I met with the team the next morning and I just told them before we left Asheville, I said, hey, there's two things I got to get across today. One is you're going to get a lot of texts that say we got robbed, you know, that say, hey, you know, we deserve to win. And the more we buy into that, the more miserable we're going to be, because at the end of the day, that's not true. Okay. The reality of this is for 44 minutes and 56 seconds, that's true. But we have to be able to see that the shot did go in. And sometimes that's life. Like, it's like you want to sit back and be like, well, what if this didn't happen? You know, where would I be if this didn't happen? But the sooner that we can just get to the place where it's like, hey, you know what? It did happen and it is happening. And at this point, like, we have to deal with it. And for me, it was from that moment where we kind of coined the phrase, like, this is either going to be a stepping stone or a stumbling block. And it's going to be one of the two, right? Like, it's going to be one of the two. And the choice is going to be inside this room of which way this is going to go. And from a biblical perspective of count it all joy, you know, in James 1, always been a verse that's really, you know, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. Like, those are the moments in life where it's really hard to count that as joy, right? It's really hard to think about, like, how is this going to be utilized? And this is not how this was supposed to go. But I think in that moment where you can decide, okay, well, with that mentality, this will definitely be a stumbling block, right? But how do I figure out a way? How do we figure out a way to turn this pain that we currently have and to allow it to shape us into a point where we can look back and say, hey, there was purpose in it. And the wildest part about our story, Jason, and I really feel like I'm biased because I'm in the middle of it. I feel like if we were at a high major, there would be a Netflix on this, you know, there would be like it would be something where like, are you serious? Like, this is almost a movie. Like, this makes no sense. But if you take a year later, okay, and you go from that heartache and you're asking yourself how all this stuff, and you take a year forward, okay, we win the championship in Asheville. We go to the tournament for the first time in 43 years.
You beat Chattanooga again.
We beat Chattanooga again, okay, and now we're going to go play Virginia. And we beat Virginia in a fashion that was basically an unbelievable ending to a game down four with 19 seconds to go. And in that game, there's a shot that went in at the basically with a second left by JP Pegues. And it's basically what you could argue is, if not the biggest win in Furman history. I mean, they're either that or the South Carolina win the last time they won an NCAA tournament game. But regardless, one of the biggest moments in the university's history from an athletic standpoint. Now, all of a sudden, like, if you say, hey, the shot, well, a year earlier, it was a negative moment. It was a championship loss. A year later, if you say the shot, right? Well, now it's not even in the SoCon tournament. Now you're talking about the NCAA tournament. And for me, it was just one of those reminders that God gave me in terms of from a leadership and a life perspective that, hey, you know what? Like, I can change the frame. Like, it can be the same word, the shot. But like I can change the perspective of what that looks like. And like, not only is the shot a whole different view, but it took place on a way bigger stage, you know? And I think when you think about that, like, now all of a sudden there's some connection between those two moments that you don't have to, like, when you hear it, you don't have to cringe. You don't have to hide from it. You know, I've had a lot of people tell me, like, hey, y'all are a miracle away from going to back-to-back tournaments. And like, there's nothing in my soul that wants to believe that. You know, because I'm just not sure that we would have gotten to where we got to without what we went through. And so that's a little bit of a 30,000 foot view, all of it. But it was a huge teaching moment for me that, hey, you know what? It did produce some steadfastness, you know, like it, and it did put us in a situation where it does build your faith and it does put you in situations where you're like, hey, you know what? That wasn't the easiest thing in the world to go through, but it forced us to try to dig deeper and to figure out what do we have to do to get to our best version of ourselves. And you know, it was an incredible journey.
Wow. Thank you for sharing all of that. I think it's funny that you beat Virginia, you know, and I've had Coach Bennett on here. It was 3, 4 years ago that we had him on, but it was after they had lost as a one seed to the 16 seed that 1 year. And then it was before they went that following year to go on and win the championship. It's one of the great, you know, year before testing of characters. It reminds me a lot. It's a little different, obviously. You didn't win a you know, national championship, but you, that's in essence, when you win a game in the NCAA tournament as a small school, that's in essence a national championship in many ways. It's a very similar path. There, like, there's a lot of parallels. Did you ever talk to Coach Bennett about his experiences and kind of watching that play out for you in the way that it did?
We never really had like a direct conversation about it, but obviously I read a lot about it. And, you know, I would see Coach Bennett occasionally on the road, and, you know, we know each other a little bit.
Sure.
But, you know, it was odd for me because how much respect I have for him. And, you know, to see him kind of on the other side of it, you know, I hated that it had to be against them. But his story did really, I mean, you look at a lot of great programs and coaches. I mean, I remember going through that a year and change ago. You feel like in the moment you're one in a million. And I think sometimes that's how we feel like when we're going through hard things in life. Like, well, nobody else is having to go through this.
Yeah, we're the only ones.
why am I having to go through this?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden your phone starts ringing and ringing and ringing. And you're like, oh, wow, it happened to him. Oh, man, it happened to him too. Oh, man, it happened to him. And then you read from some of the best coaches that the games of not just basketball, but all of history of sport, like there's these moments where, like, you know, they're defining. And, you know, to be able to see his and watch how he handled it. And he had that unbelievable quote, like, this adversity bought us a ticket to a place that we never could have been to without it. We definitely were able to cling to any of that we possibly could as we tried to turn this into a stepping stone for our program.
So that experience, right? There's two experiences here that you walked through. The first is winning the SoCon title and going and cutting down the nets. I actually have a question, you know, where's the net that you cut down? Well, it's right over your shoulder. As we record this interview, I can see the net that you cut down, winning the conference championship. Start with that moment first, and just knowing that there was a bit of a full circle moment, as we just talked about, not with the buzzer beater, but the sense that you were playing the same team that you lost to at the buzzer the year before. And this year you guys reign victorious and you get to go up on the ladder and cut down that net. What was it like in that moment? Forget the title, the tournament for a second. We're going to get to that in a minute. But just experiencing that moment and in God's grace and the opportunity and knowing that it had to go against a team that it was, you know, that hit the buzzer beater the year before, like, just all of that kind of comes into play.
You know, it was one of those nights, obviously, you'll never forget. And, you know, Rick Byrd called me the next day. And, you know, famous coach that coached at Belmont all those years and just an incredible, my personal list, the top five coach. And he just reminded me, like, hey, you know, you could win more of these, but this one will probably always be the favorite. And, you know, with it being a 43-year drought, and really for our program, you know, like we've been in this position for a couple of years now where we were positioned to compete for this. And, you know, the noise of it, you know, and kind of going through that heartbreak, you know, you feel like in that moment, okay, maybe, you know, the world would say we proved ourselves. You know, I kind of try to veer away from that because you never want the net per se to be the standard.
Right.
But for me, the biggest joy of that moment, and this is sincere as I can be, in that moment, you're seeing like grown men cry. You know, like that was probably, I'm talking like, you know, people that are 60, 70, 80 years old, you know, just weeping. And to be able to be a part of leading Furman to that particular moment at that particular mountaintop and all the pain that had kind of come with the 43-year drought, and to really be able to give that, you know, and to be able to deliver that, and to be able to ask some key people to step up on the ladder and to be able to let them feel that we, and this is me talking, like, sometimes in those moments we think, man, if I can go cut that net down, that reaffirms me as a coach, right? But when you're actually in the moment, it's like you really kind of, you'd be amazed at, like, you're just so thankful and happy for the people that got to experience it and what you can give in that moment. And so, you know, it was a lot of joy for sure. I will tell you this, and I've listened to this and then experiencing it, I was, you know, sometimes when you heed warning and then you go through something, you can kind of see it a little bit more clearly, which is why we want to, you know, seek wise counsel and watch people before you. I've always listened carefully, whether it be, you know, Jay Wright talking about championships or Tony Bennett or Dabo Sweeney. Hey, it is a moment, you know, and like you have to remember that, like, it's not a destination, right? Like, this is a moment that God's given you, and it's a great moment, but like, it's going to be over.
Right.
And I remember when it all got quiet, and I was one of the last ones to walk out the facility that night. And I did have this little glimpse of like, man, 2 hours ago, it was like complete pandemonium in here and like unbelievable and confetti and tears and joy. And like, now it's quiet and the dims are dim and like nobody's really in here. And then you're like, man, life just keeps going. And that feeling of like, okay, well, we got to go do it again, or, you know, pulling yourself outside of that moment so quickly. It was a good thing for me to be able to understand, like, hey, this is what this is. It's a great one, but it's just a moment.
Yeah. And then another moment. And the good part about it was there was something for you to look forward to. There was another game to play and another game to prepare and another way for the guys to say, okay, this is all great, but do you want to actually keep playing and preparing for obviously a tough team in Virginia? You were a 13 seed. I'll never forget that game, because I think it was the first game on the docket that day on Thursday. And I was sitting in this chair working, taping some interviews and having that up on the TV above me. And I stopped whatever I was doing in the last minute and was glued to the TV. And I remember yelling, oh my God, like when you guys hit the buzzer and won it. And this is like in Bristol, Connecticut with just me. My wife might've been here downstairs. My daughter's in college, so she's not anywhere around. And I'm just thinking about that moment. Like the Jimmy V moment always comes to me. The Jim Valvano, the shot from 1983 when they beat Houston, NC State, and you see him running around just looking for someone to hug. Like he's in complete shock and awe. And it, you know, I'm wondering just if you could describe yourself in that moment. It wasn't right at the buzzer, but it was pretty close. I think there was 1 second left, right? And so there still had to be another play. But are you kind of running around a little bit chaotic, or did the Lord have you in a sense of peace and control?
Well,
how did you feel?
I'll tell you this, you know, because of what happened a year ago, there was no sense of peace. There's still some time on the clock.
Right. You could lose this still. Yeah.
It was really hard to get control of the moment. You know, it's one of those situations you wish that the ball would have hung in there for another, you know, second and a half so that it would have been at the buzzer.
Sure.
We had a really hard time getting our team under control, to a point, Jason, where we really poorly executed our defense in that full court scenario. And I couldn't, like, the huddle was trying to get everybody's attention, but it was just like, it happened so quickly. We were down four with 19 seconds to go.
Right.
And so we basically got fouled. We made both free throws. We go up two, we get in a full court press. They throw the ball and it hangs in the air. We intercept it. We throw it ahead. JP hits a three. And this is a 5-point swing in the matter of like even real time clock. You know, you're talking about like maybe 30 seconds.
Right. It was so quick. Yeah.
So it's like this whole, like, my first reaction, to be honest with you, is, oh, wow, we're up. Like, oh, this isn't tied. Like, we've got the lead. And so then it's like, okay, well, we got to get this. We got to make sure these guys don't hit a half court shot on us. So we had some issues getting set in what we practice all the time. But fortunately, when they did get the look they got, I had a pretty good angle to see that it was a little bit more off than the shot, you know, the previous year. But it hung there for a little while. And then once the shot went in, or once the shot did not go in, I should say, and the buzzer went off, I mean, it was one of those moments like you can't even explain what that feels like. I mean, just to be on that stage in that environment, for me personally, what I think is the greatest sporting event of all time. It was my first experience in it personally as a player, as an assistant, as a head coach.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to skip school to watch those games on Thursday.
So did I.
I mean, just to be in it and to be part of the actual madness part was unbelievable. And it's one thing I learned in the previous years. You always see the glamour moments of what makes March Madness great. You don't always think about the other team on that situation, right? And what a year taught me was I felt the feeling of what the other team felt like. And so to be on the other side of that, it was an incredible day.
Yeah, that's so cool to hear you describe that. I think of a scripture too in the aftermath. So there's 1 Peter 3, verse 15. I don't know if you know this. It says, Peter's talking about always being prepared to give a reason for the hope that's within you. It's preparation. Always be prepared to give a reason for the hope that's within you, but do it with gentleness, do it with respect. I think some versions might have different versions of that or words of that. But there's a preparation that God kind of calls us to that Peter talks about, to be prepared to give a reason for the hope that's within us. Now, I see that as a couple of things. First of all, I see it as a scripture that we're not to force our faith on anybody. That's never a good idea, period. But it means we're supposed to be ready to tell people about the one that gives us hope, right? And that's in any scenario. I feel like in this scenario, though, when you guys win and have probably the biggest March Madness moment there was, although there was a lot of other ones. I mean, eventually you guys go on and lose to, you know, the team that goes to the national championship game, which is kind of crazy when you think about it, but in San Diego State. But the moment and being prepared, because over the there's 2 days between games. You know, you win Thursday, then you play Saturday. So there's this Friday moment where you're probably getting a lot of calls and being asked to do a lot of interviews and having the press conference and all these people asking you questions. Oh, I want to talk to Furman because they just had their March Madness moment. Did you feel like 1 Peter 3:15 was kind of being lived out for you? Like, okay, God, you prepared me for this moment, this platform. Now let me be honoring of that, at least in the sense of pointing back to you. Did you sense that at all?
Well, I mean, when you process how this could play out and when you choose this profession and you really, you know, I'll back up a little bit as I answer that, Jason. Yeah. Going back to, you know, we set the stage of the two events, right? And as a leader, you know, for us, I mean, we really, I guess for the 6 years we've been here, we've set the all-time wins record at Furman. And, you know, so three of the first 5 years we had done that in our tenure. Yeah. But we just hadn't been to the, we just hadn't gotten to the big stage yet, right? And it just drove you to a point of like, man, like I got to look at everything. Like I got to look at my heart. I got to dig deeper than I've ever dug in my life. And I got to figure out like, what are my motives? And like, it makes you question. It just makes you find like the smallest of millimeters of advantage. And we have our staff retreat every year in August. And when I went, you know, in college, I was business management major and double major in accounting. And obviously, you know, read a lot of the management books. And at that particular time in the early 2000s, there wasn't a shortage of books on what's your personal vision statement and mission statement. And you think of highly effective habits and, yeah, you know, you think of all that, right? Well, every time I'd started that exercise, I never completed it because, you know, I was really good in math and science. I was terrible in English. I still to this day, when my SID asked me for a quote or release, like it's not my favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't ever find anything pretty enough. And at the retreat last year, I was determined like, hey, we're going to dig on purpose as a staff. And the first night of the retreat, I told our staff, I said, tomorrow after lunch, when we have our session, I want everybody to be prepared to really go through the purpose of why we do what we do. And in a time where it's never been crazier and you never hear more complaining about our business, what purpose is going to compel us to keep living with a certain joy and like impact that we want to have in what we're doing? And I said, I really want to hear y'all like verbalize that. And if I'm being honest, Jason, the reason I did it was because I wanted to force myself to do it.
Yeah.
And I went upstairs that night to go to bed and I thought it would be, you know, an hour exercise for me. I ended up staying up for about 3 hours and really trying to tackle this. And what I came to was I realized, you know what? Like, I don't need anything super complicated. I don't need anything pretty. For me, like as a young boy, like it was always, if my mom wanted something put together, she would ask me. If it was a Lego, I love to build. I love to see things grow. I love to, you know, I started a camp when I was in college. It grew to a camp of 400 kids when I was a senior in college. Like, I've just always loved progress. And so what I really came up there is like 1 o'clock in the morning. And I just wrote down on a piece of paper, I just want to build something that matters, period. Like, that's like there's nothing else. I don't need anything after that. So then as I'm looking at this, okay, well, to build is an act. Right? Like it's a verb, right? It's a form of doing. So I want to build, and then you got to define something, right? Well, for me, it was, I want to build something. I want to build a marriage. I want to build a family. I want to build a faith. Obviously should have said that first.
Yeah.
And then I want to build a program. And then now you got to take that line and you got to be like, okay, well, what now defines matters for those four areas? And so from a program perspective, how do we have a program in today's world, right? Transfer portal, NIL, transactional as it's ever been, right? Decisions that are strictly based on the dollar, not based on impact and influence and really trying to change and influence somebody's life. And it was in that moment, it was like, hey, every decision we make, you can't have identity without criteria. And so we've got to have a criteria of like, how is this program, Furman Basketball, how in the world is this going to matter? And it was in though it was in that moment where I felt like, you know, coming into this season, it was for this to matter, this just can't be an act of what I say, hey, I just want to go win a championship. I've got to be in a process where that just becomes a result of everything else that we do, because there is an expectation of excellence. Yeah. There is an expectation of being relational and really wanting to see a player as somebody that I can help grow. And is that the true motive, right? And really understanding that this has to be not just a platform that I say I want to bring attention to myself, but it was one of those deals like for this to matter, I got to be willing to let God create a story within this that's worth telling. And I have to be able to take on the burden of wearing that, because for it to matter and for it to be a story that somebody wants to listen to, like it's probably going to be pretty hard.
Yes.
And when I went through that kind of exercise, I was like, you know what? If we get that moment and if we get that platform, I want to make sure that that is clear that I couldn't have done this on my own. And I mean, you go back, if you watch as a fan, if you go back and watch our semifinal game with Western Carolina, it's a good little reminder that like, hey, I mean, we were up 20 and we almost lost the game and we needed overtime to get to the championship. Like, hey, we don't control all this. Right. And so when I got in that environment, and you watch press conferences that happened right after the emotion of it, you know, I felt it wasn't something I had to manufacture. Like I really felt in my heart that I couldn't have done this on my own. And that this is something where I felt it had built me as a person, as a leader. But obviously I wanted it to be something where it would hopefully encourage people, right? That through sport and through what we were living out, that they could look in our story and have some inspiration about how they navigate their own heart.
Mm. Yeah, that's really well said. Coach Richie, when you're thinking through going back to 2022 and, you know, losing that game and then 2023 and then winning in a miraculous way, very similar to the way that you lost a year before, how do you not let either of those things define who you are? Because a win is a win, like you said, and you came back that night 2 hours later and that gym is empty and you're like, oh, I guess I got to wake up tomorrow and live life again. I mean, you could even parallel this, and I don't want to go too deep in this unless you want to, with the loss of your father. Like there's still the next day after everything's done and you got to kind of wake up and say, okay, what really matters? So how do you look at as a coach and say, okay, the loss, we learned from it. The win, oh my gosh, it was great, but they don't define me. How do you let that kind of manifest itself?
Well, to just be honest, it's hard. I mean, just being real.
For sure.
I think it's a lot easier to say, you know, the answer that everybody would expect you to say. But I think sometimes, you know, the whole cliche of success is a lot harder to handle than adversity, and really understanding why that's the case, because complacency is real and complacency creeps in, and also what creeps in is credit, you know. And like, I think back to a lot of Old Testament story about, you know, just the cycle of, hey, you know, hard moment, God gets them through it, you know, over and over and over. He shows the Israelites that, hey, I'm in control, I'm in charge. And then they quickly go back to complaining and they're not content and they're not satisfied and they're not happy. And then you just see this circle. And I think in life, like once you kind of have that professional moment, right? Like it could be easy to be like, okay, man, like a deep breath, you know, like, hey, I did it. And like, we're good now. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what I try to make sure in my own personal life that I guard against that, but also in our organization that we guard against that. And I think the way that you have to be able to balance that is, where do you assign the credit? Right. If I assign the credit to self, I think I have a greater propensity to fall into that complacency, because now all of a sudden, like, I'm going to depend on my strength, my skill. And now it's like, hey, I did this and I know how to do this. And like, hey, everybody relax. Like, we're going to keep doing this. I think if you have a understanding that I do have gifts that God gave me, I am created uniquely, but there still is dependence upon Him. And that there's a humility that has to come with that, that I've got to continue to grow as a person. I've got to continue to grow in my faith. I've got to continue to grow in my leadership, that just fighting the urge to be satisfied, you know? And I just think that for me, that's where I find myself. I think with the world telling you how it's a little bit, to be honest with you, it's a little disgusting in some ways of like,
yeah,
all of a sudden one game, you know, certifies you, you know, like, okay, you know, and I had to deal with that personally. Like, he can't win the big one, you know, like, I heard it and I had to navigate that, you know. And you could fight back. Well, I got my head coaching job at 34 years old and we've won 20 games and we've averaged 20, you know, like, and like, you have bitterness against that,
sure.
But then all of a sudden you win it. And like, yes, there is a part of us that you keep those receipts, you know, like you kind of file that away a little bit.
Yeah.
But you also don't want to get stuck in that negative energy, because then what you're saying is, okay, well, now this does define me, you know, like, as opposed to just saying, hey, you know what? God used myself as a leader and our program as a story to hopefully be able to impact not just the people within the program, but also people on the outside looking in. And man, I just want to continue to grow just the same way I did the year before, and to be able to continue to be utilized in a fashion that hopefully is not about me, but it's about continuing, like I said, to continue to build something that matters.
Well, and the good thing is that there's always another season. So who knows what's going to happen this year? You know, it's going to be different than last year, and it's going to be different than 2 years ago. Hopefully it's the same as last year, but even better. Who knows? But it's another season, and you can look back at all those accolades and the net that's over your right shoulder and the one that's over your left shoulder. But ultimately, those are nice to remember, and we just went through all of it, but it's still another season, and you got to get your team ready.
And you know, we talked about this as a program, like – you know, when I was a kid, my dad used to take all the three boys. We lived in Columbia, but we'd come up this way in the upstate, and there's a mountain here called Table Rock. And it's about a 4-hour hike to the top. And I remember the first time we did it, like, we would walk up and like, you're exhausted and you're tired. And then all of a sudden, like, you get like this rock view opens up and you can kind of look out. Look at it and you're like, man, this is beautiful. Wow. And it's like, but I'm not to the top yet. You know, and it's like you capture the view and it's almost enough where you're exhausted, but it motivates you to keep going a little bit. And I think sometimes, you know, you can walk two sides of that, where if you stay on that ledge and you don't keep moving forward, right, eventually that view dulls out and you just get a little complacent. But the other side of that, where you see a lot of, in my opinion, you see a lot of our current world in this, is like, you never take time to even look at that view. You right. know, like, you're yeah. just like, I'm not to the top yet. I'm not to the top yet. I got to keep going. Like, you can't stop. And I think there's this balance of like, you know, can I look at that view to appreciate how far we've come? But then can I also be motivated to continue to go further? And this doesn't delete the hard climbs before, right? And this yeah. doesn't delete maybe a couple downhills and maybe a water stream where you can get a little water and you, but like, I've got to understand the balance of this moment, but I've got to keep going. And, you know, people of faith, obviously, you know, there's really, I think the Bible's pretty clear on this. There's not, on this side of earth, there's not really a finish line. And, you right. know, you've got to keep running, right? You got to run the race to win it, but there's not like this destinational moment. And as long as I'm on this side of heaven, there's always an incompleteness that I can keep improving in. And I think that's where, you know, you have to be able to balance all that and continue to find your own motivation to keep moving forward.
Yeah, that's good. He is Bob Ritchie from Furman. Last question. I think I was thinking through this as we were preparing to talk to you about the coaches, the young coaches that either have been on this show or the ones that haven't. But listen, we have a lot of coaches that listen, whether it's high schoolers, college, whatever it might be, even NBA guys that we've talked to that listen to this show. So if you're a young Christian coach that's listening and they get to talk to Bob Ritchie, they're in their 20s, they're in their 30s. You just turned 40. I don't know if I should have said that out loud. I'm 50 now, Bob. So we're all there. We're all moving up in life. But if you get a 28-year-old assistant coach who's wanting to balance winning games and wanting to, you know, energize their team, but stay connected to Christ, which is always the balance, right? It's the difficult thing of not getting so caught up in your job. What would you say to that guy or gal, even who's trying to balance that aspect of being a believer, being someone who wants to grow in their faith, but also being competitive and trying to win as many games as you can?
Well, I would tell them that there's probably never been a harder time to be a coach, but there's probably never been a moment where great coaches are needed. And I think the biggest thing that I would try to advise is the conviction of why you do this has never been greater, because if the conviction and the motive of why you do this is not, you know, something that can last, it's not something that really is life-giving, this business will absolutely just chew you up right now. Yeah. And there's a lot of quote unquote glory in it. There's a lot of money in it. There's a nice chase in it, you know, like when you're trying to go up and get to a new spot or get to a new role and then get to be a head coach. And like, there's this nice little progression in it. And I think sometimes that part can be addicting, but I would say this, like what I've told our staff, hey, I never want us to find ourselves sitting in the staff room complaining about how hard our business is. I don't want to be the staff that says, hey, you know, the portal's ruined this and NIL's ruined this. I still want it always to be about how can we bridge the gap from when they graduate high school to they leave home, and we get this unbelievable responsibility of a 4 or 5 year period to really be part of that bridge that takes them from the house to the real world. And the motivation has to be that when they're 30, that they're coming back and they're saying, hey, you guys changed my life, you know, and you weren't always easy on me, but I tell you this, you loved me and you held me extremely accountable. And I think right now what's going on, and this is just my personal observations.
Sure.
There's so much change in our business right now that it's making coaches scared to hold players accountable.
Right.
And it's putting us in these positions where we feel like we just have to cater to all their desires. But there's two things wrong with that. The first one is this: at the core of great players, they all want to be coached. The easy part of them wants you to let them off the hook. But the deepest part of them, knowing that they have to improve and get better, they need you to hold them accountable. But what's happening is they're so slow to trust. And if you don't have the desire, which has to be fueled by the purpose, that I have to love them and I have to connect with them, that's going to be your ticket to be able to hold them accountable. Mm-hmm. And either side of that coin, if love is low and accountability is high, you're probably going to have a miserable situation. If love's high and accountability is low, everybody's going to feel good. You're probably not going to win. And I think right now, what I would tell a 28-year-old is, man, your desire to love that player has to be so real, because you realize that the 30-year-old version of that player is depending on you. Mm. And that time that you spend with them is going to give you the credit in the bank account, per se, the deposits to now hold them accountable. And if you're not willing to hold them accountable, you got to understand, like you're going to fail your program and you're going to fail that player. And I think that this understanding that just trust it, you know what I mean? Like, this is a situation, I can't necessarily prove this, but in my heart, I'm convicted by this. If we build people, the player is coming right behind it.
Right.
And then and you have to ask yourself, okay, am I going to trust that? Like, am I going to trust that if I can teach them sacrifice and I can teach them teamwork and I can teach them determination and dedication and commitment and time management and what matters and what doesn't matter and what's fleeting, what's not fleeting. If we can all that stuff is transferable. Then now all of a sudden, right? We come in here first day of classes this morning. I walk in and they're like, hey, three guys in here at 6:30 this morning. Like this is the first day back. There's no workouts.
That's right.
Like that's what's going to fuel those players at the end of the day. And I know that's a little bit long-winded, but I think that's the essence of where we are right now.
Yes.
And I don't think this is a bad time to be in this. I just think if you're going to do it, you better be really convicted of why you're doing it.
No, your why, knowing your why, I think love and accountability kind of equally. That sounds like Coach Dungy to me, who I've talked to a few times, Tony Dungy from the football world. It's love them well, but you got to keep them accountable. And that's where they see the coaching. That's where they see, okay, this guy loves me. I'm going to go to battle for him. So Bob Ritchie, thanks, man. Thanks for coming back on Sports Spectrum. We'll be watching Furman this year. See if you guys can do it again. But either way, it was great to talk to you, and you'll always have that 2023 moment, that one shining moment, as the song goes. But appreciate you, and all the best.
Well, Jason, I appreciate you having me on, and I really love what you're doing, not only for sport, but also having purpose in what you're doing. I appreciate you doing this.
And many thanks to Coach Bob Ritchie from Furman University for joining us here today on Sports Spectrum. I love his journey, right? Like an assistant coach at Charleston Southern, Furman assistant coach till 2017, and then he gets this head coaching job at just 34 years old, and he's been on this trajectory, as he described, of building and building and building. 2022, they become a team that just misses the tournament by a buzzer beater at the buzzer, a 30-footer. And the next year, they get to face the same team. They pull away with the victory. They go to the NCAA tournament for the first time since 1980. And then they have an incredible one shining moment beating Virginia. I loved hearing Coach Ritchie sort of recap all of that, the lessons learned within that, and then even talking about the advice that he would give to that 28-year-old coach who's trying to figure out how to balance all of this as a follower of Christ and as a coach trying to build a program in today's age. I love what Coach Ritchie had to say. I'm actually surprised, I didn't ask him this, that he probably got a ton of offers. That usually happens when you have a team that has a one shining moment. There's usually a bunch of offers that come your way, and I don't know if that happened with Coach Ritchie. I'm guessing it did. I don't know. But the fact that he is still at Furman and has decided this is the place I want to be is a pretty cool thing. And I'm cheering him on. Like I even said afterwards, I need to get in a plane, come down to Greenville, South Carolina, and experience a Furman game, basketball game this season somehow. And that's not always easy, but I would love to get down there and see Furman doing their thing. So we appreciate Coach Bob Ritchie for joining us here on Sports Spectrum and wish him nothing but the best. We appreciate you as well. Again, our content can be found at sportsspectrum.com and, of course, all of our social channels, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, now X, whatever it's called. You can find Sports Spectrum on all of those platforms. And certainly sharing this podcast helps get the word out, letting people know about Sports Spectrum. And hopefully you'll join us next time for another episode here on the show. I hope you all have a great rest of your day, and we will see you soon.